cooperation over chaos. We are all in this together.
The Sustainable Hour.
For a green, clean, sustainable Geelong, the Sustainable Hour.
Welcome to episode number 600 of the Sustainable Hour podcast. I don't know about the others, Colin and Mick, but it's certainly not something I imagined that I'd ever be doing, but here we go. A few years later and 600's up. Yeah, we'd like to acknowledge, as always, and it's just as important in the 600th episode as it was in the first, that we're broadcasting from the land of the Wathaurong people. We pay tribute to the elders, past, present, and those that earn that great honour in the future. We're broadcasting from stolen land, land that was never ceded, always was and always will be First Nations land. As we've experienced NAIDOC Week over the last couple of weeks, we've seen a whole lot more stories about the ancient wisdom that they've accumulated by nurturing both their land and their communities for millennia before the white invasion. And in that ancient wisdom lies many of the answers that we're going to need as we face up to the climate crisis.
We're here in Parliament today supporting 10 incredible Australians to file a complaint with the United Nations Human Rights Committee. The complaint argues that the Australian government is failing to protect them from climate harms and climate pollution by continuing to say yes to coal and gas corporations. Around 80% of the coal and gas produced here is shipped overseas to be burnt. But because it's for export, it's not counted in Australia's climate targets or its climate policies. I'll say that again. 80% of Australia's climate pollution is simply not counted.
My name is Professor Anne Polina. I'm a Nyigana, Warawa and Walanguru traditional owner from the Kimberley. I have got guardianship over the Fitzroy River. In 2023, we had the largest flood ever in the history of Western Australia. Our community went underwater. The graves of our ancestors were covered in 1.5 metres of water. We have lost everything in that flood. It has taken 3 years for us to go back and start this flood recovery.
I live with a severe autoinflammatory condition that becomes much worse during extreme heat. When I have a flare, it can feel like my skin is ripping and tearing. What I want people to understand is that climate change doesn't affect everyone equally. People living with disability, chronic illness, and poor quality housing are often hit first and hardest. But I also know how strong our communities are. We look after one another. I'm part of this case because I believe governments have a responsibility to do the same.
My name is Barry Trail. I'm an environmental scientist and also a rural volunteer firefighter for over 10 years. Like all of us, I've seen massive increases in climate weather disasters. I've had friends and colleagues who've lost their houses to fire. Tragically, in 2009, on Black Saturday in Victoria, two friends of mine and their partners were killed in the Black Saturday fires, along with more than 170 Victorians on one day. We send overseas more than four times as much carbon, coal and gas as we burn here. But if it's burnt elsewhere, it still kills Australians.
We stand here today with 10 Australians from right across the country. They're from all walks of life. They're traditional owners, they're firefighters, they're teachers, they're nurses, they're grandparents, their parents and their young people. What has united them and brought them here today to Canberra is that they have all experienced terrifying impacts from Australia's coal and gas pollution. They've come here today to Parliament to call on the Australian government to confront the hard truth that all of those harms are fueled by Australian coal and gas. Together, they have filed a landmark human rights claim in the UN Human Rights Committee, saying that the Australian government continuing to say yes to Australian coal and gas is a violation of their rights to life, their rights to home, and their rights to culture.
The 10 Australians we're standing here today with have brought the first claim filed with an international body against a country for climate harm since last year's ruling of the International Court of Justice.
The case brought to the UN Human Rights Committee highlights a glaring inconsistency in Australia's climate policy. We're taking steps to reduce domestic emissions, but we continue to expand and support fossil fuel exports that drive global warming. And when you burn fossil fuels anywhere in the world, Australians pay the price with impacts to their health, to their safety, to their security.
No matter where it's burned, Australia's coal and gas comes back to us in fires, floods, algal blooms, and extreme heat. That's the hard truth that this case asks the Australian government to confront.
We are calling on the government, stop saying yes to new coal and gas mines. Stop subsidising coal and gas companies and develop a phase-out plan for not only what we burn here, but what we're sending overseas. If we don't do that, it will simply get worse and worse and worse.
So we are asking the government to be accountable, to have a duty to care for fellow citizens, to stop subsidising coal and gas and start to have a transition plan. And we want fellow Australians to stand with us in solidarity to stop climate chaos and climate uncertainty continuing to be out of control. Thank you.
A film by Environmental Justice Australia, the Human Rights Law Centre and Earth Justice, and it was filmed by Rebecca Parker. It's available on YouTube, and you can learn more about this case on the website hardtruthscase.org.au. What better way to celebrate our 600th episode than with some hard truth? Last week, for instance, the fossil fuel company Shell published its annual LNG Outlook report, and they write that they are expecting that gas production in this world is going to increase with around 65% over the next 20 years. And as they were talking about, the Australian governments are currently spending $16 billion. Actually, it's $16.3 billion. And I'll say that again, that's $16,300 million of taxpayer money that our governments are subsidizing the fossil fuel production with. At the same time, the Australian fossil fuel companies are earning tens of billions of dollars in profit every year. And as a result of this billion-dollar taxpayer-funded circus, people are dying. And this is where I think I should hand over the microphone to Colin Market OAM, because I think we need some more hard truths here in the Sustainable Hour, Colin. And I'm hearing from my family in Europe that the climate is now hitting hard. The heat is really shutting down societies. And thank you very much, gas, oil and coal companies. People are dying.
Yeah. Well, look, thank you, Mick. My roundup this week, I was listening to the Hard Truths people there, and my roundup this week is highly pertinent to just about all of them. But I'd like to begin, if I can, by wishing a happy birthday to everybody who has been involved with the Sustainable Hour for 600 weeks. But my roundup, my world roundup, begins in North America, where thunderstorms in the northeastern United States finally cleared the air that was coming across from Canada's wildfires. And that was the air that President Donald Trump, what did he call it? Filthy pollution. And he was going to bring in extra tariffs because their smoke was coming over into America. But still, there are almost 1,000 fires still burning across Canada. From coast to coast. Canada's a big place. That meant from the Atlantic to the Pacific and the Arctic Oceans. But what President Trump failed to mention was that the US has out of control wildfires too, with the National Interagency Fire Center reporting 73 large blazes across 12 states in America, from Minnesota in the Midwest to Oregon and Washington in the Pacific Northwest. So Donald Trump really can't say that he is blameless on the count of it all. He's the fellow who stopped all of the climate efforts, or all that he can. Now, the Canadian Federal Natural Resources Department reported that 69 new fires across the country last week. That raised the total to 955. In Ontario, Canada's most populous province, nearly 200 wildfires have already burned 1.7 million hectares of forest, with 10 communities being evacuated. There are also serious fires in Nova Scotia, while in British Columbia, thousands of lightning strikes increased the number of active fires from 20 in the middle of last week to about 100 now. Canada is home to some of the world's largest forests, and major fires have now become a regular occurrence in summer. Climate experts say rising temperatures have led to drier timber, and therefore an increased fire risk. Last week, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney addressed a topic of criticism by US officials, saying that climate change was the responsibility of everyone, including the US. But it isn't just fires affecting the USA. Other parts of the United States are experiencing unusually heavy rain, leading to flooding. Those states on watch are Texas, Alaska, Missouri, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. All have experienced record rainfalls causing flash floodings across the country, and all are credited to climate change. Elsewhere in the world, Norway is battling the biggest fire in its history. It began in and still threatens the city of Drammen, which has a population of 105,000 residents and is roughly 34 kilometres southwest of Oslo, the capital. Like most of Norway, Drammen is surrounded by forests. Meanwhile, in the West African nation of Gambia, their problems from man-made climate change is a huge rise in salinity, from rising sea levels getting into their underground water supplies and storage, and essentially poisoning the land and the drinking water supplies. It's so bad it's threatening the whole nation with extinction. Gambia is a tiny nation. Much of the rest of Africa is currently in flood after intense rainfall drenched the densely populated coastal regions of Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Togo, and Nigeria. More than 140 millimetres of rain fell in some cities in less than a day. The deluge overwhelmed drainage systems, triggering a series of flash floods. 34 people died in Ghana, 5 died in Togo. In Cote d'Ivoire, 59 people have died. The World Weather Attribution Team said such a deluge was 5 times more likely in today's changed climate. They said that heavy 3-day downpours in the region had increased in intensity by roughly 23% since record keeping began. Now to Thailand, where climate change has brought a similar problem. The Thai government has requested Japanese assistance to implement new water management projects for the Chao Phraya River Basin to mitigate its own flooding problems. They're becoming more often. And all this has come at a time when studies warn that man-made climate change are altering conditions across Southeast Asia. But finally, I have some good news. Credible media reports say that the Australian Labor Party is likely to adopt a gas export tax at next week's ALP National Conference. The conference is in Adelaide. And this comes after months of pressure from across the political spectrum and the unofficial word from Labor sources say that the Albanese government is considering several new policies related to climate change, starting with the gas export tax and other tax incentives, including removing fossil fuel subsidies. We will watch this one carefully. And that small piece of good news among a scene of fire and floods elsewhere in the world ends my roundup this week.
Listen to our Sustainable Hour for the future.
Our guest is Johan Hostielek from the Caribbean island of Grenada. That's a first for us. Johan has got a very ambitious project that he's going to tell us all about today called 195 in 365. So, Johan, thank you very much for coming on. It's morning here, evening over there, we understand.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us about this. It's an incredibly ambitious initiative that you're planning.
Well, I'll say this. I'm in my 50s, but I was always an environmentalist. Saved the whales back in the 80s, etc. I was pleased when my oldest daughter, when she turned 11, started to follow in my footsteps. I'm from the little island of Grenada, by the way. Composting and recycling in school, etc. It was years ago we were sitting together looking at the planet and the state of the planet and what could we do about it. And that's where the idea came initially for a father and daughter to go around the world to ask the world to change. It took 4 years of research on my part. Then we launched, and shortly after being launching, the Minister of Environment saw what we are doing and asked my daughter to be the youth representative at COP27 in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. I am a man of strong faith. I found God saying to me, Johan, you need to make this bigger than yourself. You need to invite youth from around the world. And fast forward from then to now, we are now preparing to go to 195 countries of the world within 365 days with a youth representative from every country of the world, plus 7 youth representatives from the indigenous regions of the world, because we believe that they need to also have a voice on the international community. For 3 main things: awareness, education, and mobilization. In other words, what are the problems around the world? How can we fix them? And empowering youth all around the world to say, come, let's get the job done, and pushing to make the world a better place. That is in its simplest of forms.
So can we go through those 3 things?
Okay, well, you know, a lot of people say, oh my gosh, we're looking at climate change, etc. And I say 2 things here. Firstly, I see climate change as a symptom and not the cause. The cause is humanity's lost its way. We've forgotten what it's like to be our neighbor's keeper and the custodians of the planet. And in addressing it, you cannot look at climate change in its singularity of saying, okay, we're going to put down solar panels and bam, the world is going to be a better place. That's not true. That's a fallacy. And I mean, I love what the United Nations did about 10, 11 years ago when they came out with the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals for the whole planet. And it is exactly that. We look at these things because you have to look at everything from biodiversity loss, life below sea. You have to look at gender equality. I'll give you a simple thing. Look, if you give a man $100 and ask him, and he is broke or he is in poverty, he's not going to go and put down a solar panel. He's going to feed his family. So unless we take a holistic view of the challenges we have around the planet and say, okay, let's see how it varies from country to country, how we can work together as a planetary species and come together, that's only then can we make the difference essential to save our planet or save our position in this planet before it's too late.
And so that was the first one.
Okay, so again, those are the problems. Education. Now, I'll say education here. It is looking at everything from how do we mitigate, become more resilient, or adapt to a changing planet. That's one part of it. The other part of it is this. it's not as if we don't have the solutions out there. The solutions are already available. In other words, we have lots of fantastic people around the world who are making a difference, who have come up with solutions, whether it is from solar panels, whether it's been innovative in terms of desalination, etc. It is to highlight these solutions to how universities, how academia, how NGOs are working to make a difference. So that's why I say is seeing the solutions. And thirdly, mobilization. And this comes into a bigger part of what we're doing. And that's actually the biggest part within it. But it is, how do we get the youth involved to give a hoot? Yeah. Especially in the times where, and I use a big, we even have a part of our convoy, which is called the Hope Convoy. It is firstly to give youth a sense of hope. BBC did a report about 5 years ago. They said for youth between the ages of 18 and 25, 10,000 of them they interviewed, they found that 56% of them believed that the future was hopeless. These are odds I cannot live with. I have three girls. It's as if you tell me one or two of them believes they have no future. No, and that's why we fight. It is firstly to give youth a sense of hope, empowerment, and of the belief that together, not only that we can, but that we will change this planet together. So that is in its simplest of form. I can go into more details in a moment, but just to understand what it is for. Yes, please.
Johan, I'm more interested in the mechanics of the thing, if you like. Once you've got your 195 representatives inside a year, how are you going to mobilize them, and what are you actually going to be doing with all those people?
So it is going to be about 200, a little bit over 200 youth that are going around the world with our team of about 100 people. So for the most part, it is 146 countries by land, 33 by plane, including Australia and the Caribbean, in a flotilla of yachts, especially for the land portion of the trips. Look, this initiative is one of humanity's most audacious attempts to say, how can we save us as a human species? So we said in everything that we do, we've put forward the concept of thinking outside the box. That's what we need to do a lot more. So for the youth representatives from each country, we said the application is a simple application. First of all, we're offering meals, travel, accommodation, plus a per diem to the chosen youth representative of each country. We've said this. We want to see if these youth have the passion, the storytelling ability, and the gusto to be able to do this. So to kick it off, it's a simple process. It's a 2-minute video of who am I, where am I from, what have I done in my country, what is the initiative 195 and 365 in my perspective, and how would I change the world if I were the chosen youth representative? That they have to post on their social media, tag us in, and put it in the application form, which we have on our website. But I have to tell you, we've been getting a gazillion of these videos coming in, and you should see the passion oozing out of some of the youth that are coming there, who they're not asking for permission. They're saying, listen, we're going to change the planet. Whether you old folks are on board or not, we're there with you. We're making this happen. So what we've created with this is sort of a vessel for these youth to be able to connect with youth all around the world. Look, when we go into a country, we'll be using these, especially for the land portion of the trip. We're using these sort of sleeper coach buses that could sleep 10 people, etc., going in different directions. So one's going to see the bleach in the reefs, another one deforestation, another one meeting with indigenous peoples, etc., another one speaking at schools. But afterwards, they come back together to join the main convoy made up of trucks with trailers. So we have the trailers that sort of open out to become like conference centers. We have one with a 33-foot television screen, an innovation center, a mobile stage pulled by an electric truck to go around the world to do COP-like events in every country we're going to. So instead of it being a conference of the parties, it's a conference of the people. And I can tell you, we have been speaking to thousands of NGOs all across the world, multiple UN organizations, so they can bring out the youth to come to these events. And having scientists, experts, celebrities, whether in the music, film, culinary, or sport industry, all coming out there, as I said, to give the youth this sort of hope, this sort of gusto to say, come, let's do this. So imagine this has been sort of like a Roman circus or a fair, and where all of these organizations have the opportunity to set up the different tents, etc., along with our stuff. So when we say into the youth, you know, you give them this sort of empowerment, etc., you say, look at all the different organizations you all can get involved with, that you can then use this to sort of be the global volunteers, to be the change we need for the planet. And as I use those words, I'll share this. When we first started this, our mantra was make a change. Soon, though, we realize make a change is what's the problem with humanity. We want everybody else to change but ourselves. And then we realize that if we want true success, it has to be the change. Change starts with self. And this sort of paradigm shift that we're looking at for humanity is what this big push has been in getting everybody on board to say, come, let's get together, let's do this, let's make the world a better place. And I can tell you all, the responses globally has been phenomenal. Now, permit me if I could to tell you one of the really coolest parts of the events that we're doing. And you guys, I mean, the audience wouldn't see this, but you could sort of see it in the background here. Along the way, we're going to be having certain special events happening. So, for example, when we're in the Atacama Desert, that's where fast fashion goes to die. So if the clothing that you don't use in the States or that's not sold by Walmart, etc., is shipped down to Chile, if it's not sold, it's dumped in the desert and the huge mountains are closed. We plan to do the world's first sort of trash on fashion show there, etc. But when we get to Grenada, I don't know if you know, Grenada is the site of the world's first underwater sculpture park. Well, in collaboration with the Grenadian government, we plan to build an underwater arena similar to that of the United Nations. So it looks like the United Nations General Assembly underwater. And the youth representatives from every country of the world will be going underwater. You'll see a sign that says Australia, Vanuatu, Grenada, US, etc. And the youth will be going underwater to vote on 5 key issues. The plastics treaty, the high seas treaty, a banning of deep sea mining, a banning of bottom trawlers, ocean pollution. But they're not just voting on these issues. They're going to be voting, having caucus with NGOs and academia in their various countries. What does that mean? In collaboration with one of our partners that are coming out with an environmental app, anybody can vote. So whether you're a student in secondary school, high school, or in university, or just a parent at home that believes that the environment is something that's worth saving, or the oceans and conserving, you can vote. The votes will then be tallied from each country. And however each country votes, or however Australia votes, that's how the youth representative will be voting underwater. But they're not just going to be voting, so it's going to be brought across, live across to the world in multiple languages. And it is the possibility afterwards for the Prime Minister to tell. Yep, sorry, please.
How deep is the water, Johan?
The water is where it's going to be located. It's 35 feet. They're all with scuba gear. All of them are certified, going to be certified divers, preparing for this, because all of this is part of a bigger program we have already putting in place. But the thing is, when they finish vote, it allows a prime minister to tell governments of the world that civil society is saying that we need to take action now. But more importantly than all of that is it gives people a voice. It gives people all around the world a feeling that my voice matters, what I think counts. And that is part of the big movement we're creating.
I think it's easy to gain insights into the youth representatives by just looking at you and the way you operate and the passion with which you speak. But I'm just wondering, like, this is an incredible initiative that you've managed to put together. Was there a particular event where you felt this is the tipping point, this is going to work?
I'll tell you this. For me, this has been a walk in faith. There's been we're close there now. Yeah, I mean, we've spoken with the cabinet. We actually presented to the cabinet of the government of Grenada to make this a diplomatic mission. Now, I've spoken with the UN, many different bodies directly, etc. But we weren't always there. It took forever to get from where we started to now. In the beginning, a gazillion people said, "You're crazy. It will never work," and so many doors got shut in my face. But I'll say it a little bit differently. I am a proud father of 3 girls wanting a better world. That's what drives me. When things were rough, and you know, sometimes I wanted to give up my faith in God, say, nope, too much is at stake. So every time, you know, when things got really bad, I would say, look, what would happen if we did nothing? And I can't live with that. I cannot live with that. And that's been my driving force. So it's not today for tomorrow that I said, woohoo, everything's got better. I would say it's been drip feed of one door opens, then another door opens. Then after a few years, I got into LinkedIn and I was just like how I connected with you, Tony. It's really, I've learned to weaponize LinkedIn to get to people, looking at where they put a tick on something. So, and I would say LinkedIn has been a key point for me in terms of the change of how we get the message to the world. Yeah.
I'm really interested. You know, when you're asking your new representatives to tell you what they've done for their communities, what have you and your three daughters done for Grenada?
Okay, well, I can tell you, my oldest daughter, we've done loads of cleanups here. We've spoken at schools here. My daughter and I have been speaking in many universities around the world at different COP events, etc. She even testified at the Inter-American Court for Human Rights on climate justice, that the climate is a human right for every, and they actually won the case last year. So if you ever Google Giovanna Hoshdialek, you'll see that there. I've been in the background intricately involved with our solid waste department here on getting our recycling system from our composting or recycle organics from the plastics. We did a whole 2 years ago a nationwide event where we got all the different NGOs coming on board to do weather cleanups, underwater cleanups, launching of various initiatives. We've been very active, not only in Grenada, in the region, but internationally also. And I'll just quickly say this to you here, because I've said this to my daughter and I say it to others, and I learned this from my father. It is practice what you preach. It's not do as I say, but do as I do. And that's what we have done consistently in all our aspects of this initiative. Oh, and by the way, just so that you know, we plan to do all of this with net zero and to have minimal environmental footprint as possible. In other words, whether we're going to be planting trees, etc., or offsetting using electric vehicles, even in terms of how we show the world the waste, we're using everything from recycling, no single plastics. We have our own kiln for recycling, etc. We want a world where we can, in peace, coexist with one another and have a better planet. Let's come together to be the change for the planet. Be the change. Someone, 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 be the change.
From one small island shore, a father dreamed of more. A daughter raised her voice, turned her feelings into choice. They called our dream too wild, we stepped across the tide. 195 young voices come alive. Catch the ball. Sing it loud. From nations far apart,
we meet with open hearts.
Old borders lose their hold.
New stories can be told.
Size does not decide strength. A spark can light in many ways.
We're moving with or without you.
For 365 days.
Catch the ball.
Planet, want a different planet.
The future makes the call
for us to coexist on.
One planet, one shared home. No one should stand alone.
Catch the ball,
catch the ball,
then pass it on.
Then
sing it loud. Someone throw to the future.
You catch it.
You make your pledge.
You pass it on.
Head or high water. I'll catch it.
Right now, it's not about crying over spilt milk. It's what are you guys going to do to change it? And how can we, our generation, help you in the process to make that happen?
Johan, in the Sustainable Hour, over the last year or so, I think we have spoken with so many people who mention, and we come back to this topic again and again, the topic of inequality. What that means when it comes to the climate problems that we have. That not everyone is equal in terms of their interest in solving this problem. There's actually people who are profiting from creating the mess. And we are seeing this gap between rich and poor expanding, and the politicians are not willing to take any action. We see that again and again. So it seems to me that if you come in as a young person, these are big systematic problems we have in society. How are they going to fix that?
Well, I'll tell you this. I don't like to use the word R as in revolution. And this is not, I'm not a revolutionary. I'm just a simple dad of three girls. But I feel you, because this is a constant thing that many youth are saying. Look, Grenada is the world's 11th smallest country. Yeah, we're probably about the size of Sydney. We are that small. But I always say, and I say to the youth, size does not determine strength. We are, if we want true change, you need to have three key stakeholders involved. Civil society, i.e. NGOs and academia. Two, governments and multilateral organizations like the World Bank, UN, etc. And three, business community and corporations. But it has to be in that order. It is a grassroots-led movement that is causing governments, or nudging governments, and I use that word there, to really take proper policy decisions that start to hold business and corporations accountable for their actions, so they start to address their ESGs and their CSRs. And it is that sort of movement that is, right now, this is a CIDS-led initiative, right? We've been speaking to AOSIS, the CARICOM, etc. I've had the esteemed pleasure of speaking to many ministers in Africa. I was also supposed to present when I was in the UN to the caucus of the African Union. What we're offering the African Union is the opportunity to collaborate and partner with us, because this is a global South-led initiative to the world, whereby we're saying to the world, yes, to the global North, we appreciate and we would like your help, but understand this, with or without you, we are going to make this planet a better place. I can tell you, you can feel the hunger, the drive, the passion coming, especially from African countries in the youth there, that are saying, come hell or high water, we're going to make this world a better place. So we invite you, Mr. and Mrs. from the Global North, join us in this quest that we can create a world that is more equitable for one and all, and in showing what to do. Oh, by the way, I did forget. How do we get the messaging out? The youth who are going to be with us, they're going to be constantly blogging, vlogging, doing podcasts, etc. Our creative team, working with some fantastic producers and directors, we're going to be doing a documentary feature film on this and a reality series that will be coming out every following week, a 25-minute episode in many languages, so that the message could get back to people of all different languages of the world, not just English. Right now, the challenge we have globally is 70% of the messaging is in English. We want people to be able to hear it in Swahili, in Malay, in whatever language your people are, and feel the pride internally as you see your indigenous or your youth from your country doing what seemed as impossible, going around the world, telling a message and showing your people what's happening. Yes, please.
That's brilliant, Johan, and it's wonderful. How are you going to fund it?
Ah, lovely. Best thing. Now, a friend of mine said this the other day. Johan, this is a corporation's wet dream. In other words, we are going to 195 countries of the world. We do have electric vehicles that are going wrong. The youth who are going wrong with us are going to be blogging, vlogging, using ours. So whether it's an Apple phone or a Samsung or Hawaii phone, yeah, we will be, the types of clothing, the fact that we have all the buses there, through one of the companies that are partnering with us, they're actually going to be offering us the drones to do drone displays in the night, where you could then put the logos for the corporations, etc. And not only about the possibility of funding, I have to say, humbly, it's been amazing to see. You ever see a bird catch a good thermal and they keep going in circles higher and higher? I am meeting the companies that I am meeting with that are not only now pledging the support, let's just say some very, very big companies, not companies, corporations. I have meetings lined up with the CEO of them, and two of which are the CEOs of two big car manufacturing companies that we are in talks with, among others, in terms of we're now getting to that level to get the funding together for hopefully to be able to kick off in as early as autumn of this year. Well, our autumn, your spring.
That's wonderful. I just hope that the car manufacturers are manufacturers of electric cars.
That's what we're talking about. Absolutely.
No, I just wonder whether it was Tesla and Elon Musk, and I couldn't see him coming on board.
The two car manufacturers that I have meetings coming up with are both European-based presently with the CEOs. But we have ongoing talks with also some of the camera production company. We had a pitch with them the other day, and I'm happy to say that we are right now coming in the right circles. What we're now waiting on, as I said previously, I presented to the government of Grenada the opportunity for making this a diplomatic mission. That has been the biggest part that we're looking at, because as you know, getting people, not everybody has a powerful passport like Australia. It is using this mission as little David to Goliath, and Grenada, because of its size, we're good friends with the Russians, the Chinese, the Arabs, the Africans, the Americans, Europeans, etc. We have no enemies, so it's not seen as a threat. But it's also a critical thing we need for government-to-government interaction and for the diplomatic support that we're looking for. So for visas, security, logistics, etc. Yes.
So speaking of the interaction, if I as an Australian really get excited from listening to you and want to be part of this, what's the next step, and how do we get involved as individuals, for instance, in our country, Australia?
Okay, so very good that you said that. Firstly, it's easy to go to the website for now, 195and365.com, or onto our YouTube. You could see the YouTube videos as how easy it is to make the videos, to then post on your social media, tagging us in. And we haven't even officially put out the flyer yet. This is just from word of mouth, the videos that are coming in. We were officially waiting for the government of Grenada to put that official partnership out so that people could see the legitimacy of what we're doing while we put this thing forward. And as I said, from there, it is then very easy to get involved. I want to add the extra point. It's not just about the youth who are going around the world. It is also for the volunteering in your country to help. I'll give you an example. We were invited last year by Youth for Water Plus in India, over 500,000 members. They like so much what we're doing that they're now preparing to go around India to do their own convoy around India with the same thing. We've had similar success with African Youth for Climate Change, over 1 million members. Les Jeunesses Africaines pour le Changement Climatique, also Gabon, all of them wanting to do various caravans across. This has become a movement, even though, you know, and I'll add another part. We've had youth organizations, as you said, how get involved, that have indicated to us in many countries that they're already saving funds so that they can rent buses, so they could join us for a few countries before to a few countries after. And the opportunity that we have then for training sessions for them to make them change makers for their countries has just been huge, huge.
What stage are you at with choosing the representatives from the countries?
We said we're going to do this differently. In other words, we want stakeholder buy-in all across the world. So we're working with NGOs in the various countries who are then basically mandated to sort of filter through the thousands or tens of thousands of applications we are getting in from around the world for their various countries, so that the stakeholders could sort of break it down to the top 20, etc., for each country, for us to then go through the final deliberations, etc. Because for us, even though this initiative came from Grenada, this is our present to humanity. This is our present to the world for everybody to own. So it's not just us saying, yes, we're doing this, this is the person. No, We want everybody involved to say, come, let's get together as a planetary species and save the world before it's too late. Which brings me in to the other part, if I could, about this. I know the audience can't see it, but Grenada is called the Isle of Spice. We're the second largest producers of nutmeg. And as such, 5 years ago, my daughter made the Global Nutmeg Football. It is a football that's a globe and a nutmeg in one, as a sort of pledge for humanity to make a change for the betterment when they get it. You know, spices were the original presents, etc., with Jesus and all of that. So we are preparing to kick off a global football campaign or TikTok campaign, Be the Change campaign, where, you know, just like by the ice bucket challenge, people get the football and they have somebody throw them the ball, they catch the ball, they say, I'm kicking off 195 in 365 in Melbourne. And they kick the ball and then they make the pledge, be the change. You know, we've had many influencers, football stars, and especially with Football World Cup, and celebrities who've already said, when you're ready to kick off the campaign, let's do this. So we're now just waiting on the government to really kick off this big global campaign that's coming with it also. And I say that because it is us using social media and all of these as a tool to really get youth around the world involved to say, let's do this. Yes, please.
Well, look, I'm glad you brought us up football into the conversation, Johan, because I'm thinking of the Tartan Army, the Scottish fans who followed Scotland into America and just about took over Boston through being happy and having a glorious time and have holding parties everywhere and putting cones on statues and doing the unusual and then cleaning up after themselves, and they virtually won friends everywhere. And if you were to ask me my advice for a group of young people who are turning up and wanting to convert people or to change people's thinking, I would suggest use the Tartan Army as a blueprint and just go and have fun, but get people involved and let them, when you leave, let them say, oh, we miss those people, we need to get them back.
Exactly, exactly. And you see, this is why we used football. Football, you know, the world could get angry with one another, and it unfortunately too often does. But what still unites the world is football. And that is one of the mechanisms we have for this. As I just said that about unifying the world, let me add another quick point here. There is actually an added plus to what we're doing. Look, we're going to be having a Ukrainian, a Russian, a Congolese, a Rwandan, an Israeli, a Palestinian, an American, Iranian, a Pakistani, Indian, all coming with us on this trip. And it's an opportunity for us not only to show the world or ask the world to change, but showing them how we do it. And that the youth of the planet want a different planet for us to coexist on. We actually even have the Hope Mobile, which is, you know, like the VW camper van that they used to have there, but an electric one, whereby every week, two other youth will be driving an electric vehicle going around the world. In other words, constantly changing. But we will have representatives from countries which are sort of at odds with one another, if I could put it as diplomatic as possible, showing the world, look, these youth can coexist. This is not what the youth want. We want a world where we can, in peace, coexist with one another and have a better planet. And with them, yes, as much as I'm the old fogey and the leader of this, this is a youth-led initiative through and through. The youth are doing this. We're just here to guide them. We're here to give them the tools to empower them to say, guys, y'all are the ones that have to take care of the planet for the mess we made, which we're sorry about. But partner, right now, it's not about crying over spilt milk. It's what are you guys going to do to change it? And how can we, our generation, help you in the process to make that happen? Yeah. So I just wanted to tie up to that to say, you know, I am really humbled as to how this has grown from just a simple conversation with a father and daughter to know that bigger thing of how we are uniting the world to say, let's come together to be the change for the planet. So, thank you.
What better way to celebrate our 600th episode mark or whatever we call it. It's not a birthday, but we feel somewhat proud that we've come to number 600. And this wonderful enthusiasm and this positive energy you have delivered today, Johan, that's exactly what we need to move on into our next 100 episodes. And interestingly, we're back to the first slogan. We started out 13 years ago with saying, be the change. And we said that every program, we ended it with saying, be the change. And then we started saying, be the difference, and so on. What I really like is your slogan, come hell or high water, we will make this world a better world. Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
high
you.
High five.
Yeah. And our present to humanity is a good one as well.
But hold on. Before you go, I just want to add something quickly, if I could. I'm a little upset with you. Do you like this initiative?
Oh, yeah.
Tony, do you like this initiative?
Yes, very much.
Please, then claim it. This is, as I said, our present to you. Stop saying your initiative, and please start saying our initiative. It's as much
our initiative
as it is. Yeah. Thank you. I feel honored for that now. Yes.
I wanted to say that I think you're aiming it correctly at youth, because number one, they're the people who are going to be much more affected than my generation, certainly. And once you get them on a roll, once you get the young people of the world working together and on a roll, it's something that's never happened before. And it will be remarkable. So all I'll say is more power to your elbow and just keep it rolling.
Yes. Be that change for the planet.
I woke up feeling like the world's on fire. Storms are rising, rivers running drier. But then I tuned in, turned the dial, and found a reason to stay inspired. They said the greatest threat is thinking someone else will do it. But I can feel the change. I know we're moving through it.
Time is running out.
I heard it on the sustainable hour, hope alive, and the time is now. Stand up, speak out, let's build our power. Be the difference, we know how.
Carry on just being the difference.
They talk of profits, pipelines, and delay. Though we got voices that won't fade away.
To see and understand the bigger
picture. From city streets to the coastal sand, we're backing leaders who take a stand. They said as society grows greater, we plant trees in whose shade we may never sin. So let's rise up, this is it.
Our next guest is...
I heard it on the sustain.
The difference.
You can do it.
A new industrial revolution powered by millions of sustainable innovations is essential.
Unite in a national effort to save from destruction all that makes life itself worth living.